Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Cole Harnaday.
Hey, Ben.
And Chris Casso.
Hello.
How is everybody today?
Lovely.
Doing good.
Yeah, yeah.
Great.
Rosy cheeked, although it's fake rose, but you know, whatever.
And not just because it's so warm outside.
No, yeah. I'm actually not melting right now, which is amazing.
Nice, yeah.
It's really amazing. Good. Yeah.
All right. So this is episode 127. We've done 127 of these people, if you can believe it. And
is your head spinny? My head is spinny. That makes my
well,
seriously?
Fortunately, we haven't done them all in a row. We've taken some breaks, you know, but they have come out weekly.
I've been sitting alone in the store this entire time.
All right.
Hello.
Explain something.
You got to get out and find something to do, Chris.
Yeah,
speaking of things to do, Cole Harnaday, you got something right in front of you. Tell us what that is.
Well, the comic books?
Your plug.
Oh, my play. I'm being intentionally obtuse, Ben Lawrence. It's one of the few things I'm good at. Yes, I'm currently in a production at 12th Avenue Arts. It's MAP Theater's Greensward, written by R. Hamilton Wright and directed by Richard Zimon. And it stars, let me tell you, folks, I will be very honest with you, I am suffering from imposter syndrome with this production. This play stars Ashley Bagwell, Mariana DeFazio, Nick Donner, Melissa Fenwick, Peggy Gannon, Bill Higham, myself, Kevin Lynn, and Jason Marr. And these are all actors that I have been friends with, acquainted with, and admired for years. And now I'm actually on stage with them, and I have a hard time standing upright. So it's a really cute, bizarre little play about what happens when a man develops a self-manicuring lawn and the world teeters on the edge of financial collapse. It's a comedy. It's a satire. It's a bit of a send-up on films like Doctor Strangelove, and there's a film noir aspects to it. Reviews have been great. People have been digging it. It runs from July 7th to July 29th, and we have and next Monday night. What is next Monday night?
It's the 17th.
The 17th.
Because that's when I'm seeing it.
Oh, okay. Great. Thanks for telling me. But I'm having a marvelous time, and I'm quite proud of this production for many numbers of reasons, not to mention the fact that thanks to my participation in this production, I have been invited to take part in Sandbox Radio, which is like a dream come true for me. I hope you guys can get your head around that, because I can't. All right. Greensward, July 7th through 29th at
all right.
Fifth Avenue Arts. It's pay what you will. There's no particular set ticket price.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. MapTheater.org. Also go to brownpapertickets.org and search for Greensward. And hey, let's get on to the show. Thank you, Cole. Let's get on with the show, everybody. And what's new this week here at the Dungeon? What are people buying?
Well, they're buying a lot of Monstrous right now because we are about to have a guest signing by the creators here. Monstrous Volume 2 just released this last week, and people have been waiting quite a while for that.
Yes.
And then I've been forcing people to buy The Doorman.
Yes.
And I think we actually have like one copy left. We just got in like 6 or 7 copies.
And we just sold one to Ben Lawrence.
So. Yes.
Yes.
That will be his
one.
Future book report book, I'm sure.
Well, I can't do it because Chris already did it.
Yeah, that's right.
You could do it. Multiple opinions are good.
That's right.
Yep. And then The Dark Days, the casting came out from DC.
Yep.
Which I'll be reviewing sooner or later. And that actually looks like we sold out of one of the covers, because everything has more than one cover these days.
And a lot of them are shiny.
Super shiny.
How else are you supposed to sell multiple copies of the same comic to the same people?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's the new business model.
Mm-hmm.
But Nicole, you reviewed...
I reviewed The Forge, and that was
like the prelude.
That was the there's a number of one shots, The Forge and the casting, and then there will be Dark Days Metal.
I'll be complaining about that
we'll
in the future.
Talk about some formatting.
So, yes. that stuff's all been doing pretty good. I don't know, anything else you noticed, Nicole? That's been
like AD After Death hardcover has been coming out, and people have been
picking that up pretty consistently. That's the Jeff Lemire and
Scott Snyder
book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been selling a lot of the past week or two is we got this really really cool Bronze Age Marvel collection that had the first appearance of Wolverine and Punisher and most of the Marvel characters after the 70s. So that's been a really cool thing that you could come and see at the store.
Cool.
Because we still have like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these books. And
this is an incredible collection, you guys. There are multiple copies, mint condition, of some, landmark type of stories from the 70s and the 80s, and painful for me to look at.
I have to say they are really beautiful, beautiful copies of things. It's really cool to see.
Yeah, we double as a museum sometimes.
Yeah.
Come on down and check it out.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep.
All right, yeah, come on down to Comic Extension at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford and check out this collection. All right, so thank you, guys. In sad news, Stan Lee's lovely wife, Joan Lee, has passed away. Mm-hmm. This made the news when she died. I honestly had never heard of her before she passed away, but there was a quote from Stan Lee that I put in the show notes so you all know it. And he is on record as saying, my whole adult life, I've never been to a barber. Joanie always cuts my hair. Yeah. And I thought that was sweet.
Yeah,
that
is very sweet.
I found a Daredevil sequence where Stan Lee and Joanie are walking around the city going on a tour, and they're kind of complaining at each other, and then Daredevil runs by them and just like, hey, fearless leader, and Joanie's just like, huh. So it's, you know, she's popped up kind of in the background here and there, mentioned.
I just remember her being off camera in Adult Swim, the animated
Robot
action
Chicken.
Oh, gee whiz. Thank you. Yeah. Because she's off camera while Stan's doing something naughty on camera. Oh. That's the only time Robot Chicken. It's not like I haven't watched that show a bajillion times.
I don't think about it that often anymore, though, so yeah. I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
They were, and they were married like 43 years or something. I don't know. They were.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. It's got to be longer than that.
Many decades. Yeah. Many.
Which means he never cut his, he never went to a barber until he was like in his mid-30s? Stan Lee. Poking holes in your story here, sir. All right.
Well, my numbers aren't accurate. Let's just note that.
Well. Anyway, it's Joan Lee's passed away. It's a sad story. Speaking of a not sad story, that's a terrible
just,
segue.
Let's
story.
Just bring it all the way up.
Yeah, so we've talked about Amalgam Comics before. It's a it's in Philadelphia. It is the first, and I don't know if it's still the only, female-owned comic book store. Mm-hmm. African-American female-owned comic book store.
Yeah, there's
store
a lot of women who
East
own
Coast.
Comic book stores, but they're always people of color.
Mm-hmm. And it's on the East Coast, and they've been open about 18 months now, I guess, and they just received a grant for $50,000 to expand their store.
Yeah, because she wants to help provide support for local artists and local creators and help them get started into the industry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she was saying that there is renovated rooms in her building, which I think is amazing that you just have these, like, I don't know, I imagine catacombs. I'm like, can we have some catacombs, please? Because we could utilize those, but
We come from a Seattle perspective where retail space is so hard to come by.
Mm-hmm. Right, and like renting a refrigerator box to actually live in.
Yeah.
It's a couple grand a month.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But it is very exciting what she is going to be doing with that space, and she made mention that, you know, she does sell self-published work. A lot of stuff isn't really up to a retail standard, and she wants to be able to support people who might not be able to go to art school and do those sort of things due to, you know, the financial requirements for those types of things. So I think that's really great. And it's super in line with stuff that we would, you know, eventually probably like to do.
Yeah, with our nonprofit
stuff. So it's right in line with that. I'm really, really excited for her. See.
So if you want to give us $50,000.
I know. When I read that, listener, I was like, oh, wait, can I ask, please?
You gotta apply for that grant.
Yeah.
I wish I could find the name of the grant here, but I'll be able to find it. She's opening up the back of this store. It's this open space that she has access to and turning it into an event space. I'm wondering if, how would Comic Extension, you guys need to expand.
Yeah.
You guys
yeah.
need a bigger space.
They would need an annex. That's what they would need. A dungeon annex where you've got like the split.
Maybe we could just like slowly yeah. take over yeah. this whole Potosa building
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
You know?
No, we would
Everyone
love that.
Retire.
It's just that Seattle predicament.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to move further north yeah, to get all the good real estate. Right. Or south.
We'll just time it. Everybody just move at the same time.
Yeah.
All right. And so congratulations
yes,
to her. Moving on. Last time we talked about superhero movies, I mentioned that Wonder Woman was kicking ass and taking names. Well, this time it's Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's kicking ass and taking names. A buddy of mine on Facebook had a very, very, like, gushing review of Tom Holland's portrayal
I've
of
heard
Spider-Man.
Nothing but gushing reviews from most customers
mm-hmm.
and reviews
I've
online.
Been hearing words like fun, which is what you want to associate with a Spider-Man movie. Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I haven't seen any of the Spider-Man movies except the very first one.
Definitely do yourself a favor and do the second one with Absolutely. Dr. Octopus because that's okay. the best one.
Is that the best one?
That
For a
I've
long
seen
time,
so far.
And I think Chris will agree with me and maybe Nicole, but not necessarily because we disagree on a lot of things. But
I hate everything that he likes.
But for a long time, I thought Spider-Man 2 was the best superhero movie ever made.
Yeah.
Until I think Iron Man, because I thought Iron Man
right.
was pretty groundbreaking. But great. I mean, the depiction of Dr. Octopus mm-hmm. is superb.
Great acting.
Well written. The special effects were out of control.
Great balance of themes.
And it was not predictable. It was not that predictable. It was not so much the predictable superhero story. Formulaic arc that we are now so accustomed to. It was mm-hmm. There was stuff that happened in it that I didn't see coming, and I highly recommend it, Benjamin. You should see it.
I'll yep. check it out.
And just watched the Thomas Hayden Church parts of the third one.
Okay.
Yeah.
He makes a good Sandman.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, he does. He really does.
I don't
yeah.
even remember anything about it. I was so
good.
I saw it once in the theater and I never approached it again.
Too many villains in the kitchen or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like anytime you do that, it just
yeah.
but they also somebody do the, I'm the evil
and now you want a villainous cooking
yes.
competition
well, I mean,
reality TV show.
When you say too many villains in the kitchen, that brings to mind the like the Batman and Robin problem where it's
yeah,
just to try to
yeah.
shove
yeah.
the rest of the rogues
Precisely.
Gallery into that
yeah.
final movie.
Yeah. yeah, and then you have to, it's a hard balancing act the more characters you introduce.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in the third Spider-Man, like Venom was there for like 2 seconds or something, wasn't
yeah.
he? And it was just like,
The Venom at least did something more than shoving James Franco in as the second Green Goblin. And you're just like, ugh, why? And then like right. the last Amazing Spider-Man movie, Electro was actually pretty interesting. Electro. But they shoved in kind of a Green Goblin, Hobgoblin thing that was atrocious.
Mm.
So you're
really?
Just like, why do we do
and
this?
And wasn't there like an Electro Rhino?
The Rhino was in it too. Yeah.
yeah Electro
yeah.
Rhino.
Yeah.
That was the stupidest thing.
That's too much.
And it was actually an actor I like, Paul Giamatti, as the Rhino.
Seriously, I despised
yeah.
the first one so much
yeah,
that
yeah,
I didn't
yeah.
get near the
But they
one.
Didn't. They decided like, hey, we have this great actor, Paul Giamatti. Let's make him unrecognizable as Paul Giamatti.
Right.
Like he's this Russian gangster with too many tattoos and a weird accent.
Well, wasn't it one of the Wayans brothers as Electro?
Yeah, and that worked. I actually liked the Electro.
Okay, I can't remember which Wayans brother it was. Though.
They did something interesting because the Electro
was
boring.
I thought it was Jamie Foxx.
Oh, it was Jamie Foxx? Excuse me.
I think
oh,
so.
Oh, yeah, it was Jamie, yeah.
But he's all blue and so.
Yeah.
It worked. It worked if you watched it. As far as an interesting approach to a boring character,
mm-hmm.
it worked.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, new movie.
Yes,
yeah,
the new movie looks fun.
None of us at this table have seen Spider-Man Homecoming yet, correct?
Not yet, no.
I haven't seen it. But also, I'm like, Tom Holland's British. Can we get American actors to play American superheroes that aren't Ben Affleck?
Is he British?
No. Huh.
Tom Holland apparently is British.
Oh, yeah, he is British,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
mm-hmm.
it's a, you know, Ben,
I don't have a problem
it's
with
a
that.
Question of who's capable of taking on the role and the complexity of the character, you know.
I'm going to talk about something
Grandpa,
else.
Grandpa, do you have your lap blanket on? You might get cold.
We're going to bring that up again
You've
in a sec.
You've been disowned, little girl.
Not right. the first time.
All right, so...
Oh.
But I'm sure by the time we all reconvene, we'll have seen Spider-Man Homecoming and we'll have something
yeah.
to say. But all the reviews are saying it's the best MCU film to date.
great.
And it's the
which is very high, I think, because a lot of the movies have been so good.
Yeah, they've been great. All right, and I didn't realize that it was so movie heavy this week. Hellboy Hellboy reboot will embrace practical effects, and it's R rating. Director Neil Marshall's looking to bring movie making back to its roots with Hellboy: Rise of the Blood Queen. Cole Hornaday, how do you feel about this?
Well,
go straight to the source.
I think that I have some problems, but it's really kind of silly to have any kind of problems for a film that hasn't even like gotten off the ground,
right? Yeah.
I loved the first film. Is one of my favorite. The first Hellboy film is one of my favorite films, and it had its own design aesthetic. It didn't look like Mignola illustrations because that would be really tough.
Yeah,
but that being said. Ron Perlman looks like a Mignola illustration, so when they put him in the makeup, he looked even more so.
You almost think that Mignola tailored the comic book character after Ron Perlman.
I agree. I agree with you. Same jaw, same eyes, set of his eyes.
So let me get your opinion on this.
Yeah.
The tail. Perlman's very strongly known for his tail. You know, playing
shy
the
about it.
David Harbour is rumored to be cast as Hellboy. Do you know who David Harbour is?
No.
Did you see Stranger Things?
Yes.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
He's another Ron Perlman. There you go.
You know, I liked him.
Okay.
He was terrific. It's just that when I hear, you know, hard R, I just think...
R for violence, not for sex.
Right. You're just pushing... you're pushing exploitation unnecessarily.
Well, in the article, it doesn't say that they're going to try to really push it.
Right.
It's just that it's more of like if they do that, that's fine because we're okay for it.
Yeah.
So it just the phrase was like the cuffs are off kind of thing.
Yeah.
So they don't feel like they have to really rope it in boundaries, which makes sense. And I think that's nice to be able to do that.
So my question is, how are they going to develop the story? I love. First forays, they always work the best for me because you're establishing who all the characters are, and the world of the play, the world of the movie. And I think the first Hellboy movie is an incredible success that way. And the second one is a major slump. The plot is not as strong.
It's a sophomore effort.
It's a sophomore slump. Thank you. But you know, I've been reading the BPRD stories, and we still have never, you know, gotten to. They have all. In the comics, in the movies, they tease us with, you know, Hellboy being the son of Satan and becoming the Anangrama, the ruler of the world. And I would like to see those things. And, you know, I would like to see them take on the end of the world stories from the BPRD comics.
Mm-hmm. I'd look at BPRD really TV series to go with this.
Ooh.
Oh, that would be.
Ooh.
Yeah.
TV execs, if you're listening.
Yeah.
I am a
big fan of things connecting universes. I know some people are kind of getting overwhelmed with it, with the superhero thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really fun if you like the genre and you can dive into more material. That's, you know.
And you could spend more time with each unique character
exactly.
on BPRD. And there's some really great characters that I kind of like a little bit more than Hellboy after a while, just because they spent more time developing over the course of years.
Here's the only beef I have with it, and that is we're going to have to start from scratch again. They're not going to, it's not going to be, you know, Hellboy 3.
Right.
It's going to be, we're going to start from ground zero. We're going to have to retell the origin. We're going to have to redo a lot of things. And inevitably, the producers, the production company, the writer, the director, they're going to want to do their own little take on it, which I just find to be really irritating.
How dare you use your own creativity to add something to this.
Go do your own thing. Just leave my Hellboy alone.
Get out of my Hellboy.
That's right.
All right. And finally this week, I want to tell you what I did yesterday. I went to this movie theater in Seattle. I went to the Regal 16, which used to be known as the Meridian 16, which was like the worst theater complex in Seattle. It had... terrible sound, dirty screens,
the dirty
seats.
Screens.
Yeah, there's, you know, you could see spots on the screen.
On it.
It had
and the lost souls walking around behind it.
It had uncomfortable seats. I wouldn't put it past it. And if I'm honest, terrible clientele. But sometimes when you're downtown and you have to see a movie, it's either that movie or Pacific Place.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went there last night because they were showing a movie that I was going to see last night. And I walk in and they have completely transformed. I don't know if they did this to all the theaters, but the theater I saw this movie in had like electric reclining chairs.
Oh, wow.
What
yeah.
the what?
And like little tables that you can, and yeah. and like, it was like sitting in first class.
And was in your a movie ticket like $35?
Tickets are like $16.50 plus like a service charge.
That's not bad.
So, you know, two movie tickets is almost as much as a, like a dinner for two. Right. But anyway, the movie that I saw was Wonder Woman.
Yay!
And I saw because in preparation for today, so now we've all seen Wonder Woman. I gotta tell you, the first, I am not really versed in the Wonder Woman mythos. Like, I don't know who people are. I don't know their names. Mm-hmm. And so when Chris Pine showed up, and warning, there's gonna be Wonder Woman spoilers.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'll put that in the show notes. When Chris Pine shows up, and he's just speaking like Chris Pine, like he's talking like Captain Kirk. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, that's interesting. And then he says he works for British intelligence. And I'm like, okay, listen for when he says he's American. That's important. That's important. That's important. Because otherwise, this is going to keep me out of it for the entire movie.
Right.
And I never heard it.
Uh-oh.
Apparently, he does say it at some point.
He does say that he's American.
I miss it. But I spent the entire movie sitting there going, why is everybody else speaking with a British accent, but Chris Pine?
Right.
What's up with this?
Because he's almost so cursed. Good looking.
I'm like, what's going on?
Okay, let's not just go into the pine nuts it. Thing. But
all right.
Yeah.
Oh, so anyway.
Pine nuts.
What's like at the very end, they show his picture and he's got a like an Uncle Sam hat on his plane. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, that's probably just something that I missed. So yeah.
Like he was on loan.
But you got hung up on this one thing.
It's surprising how much that bothered me.
Oh, man.
All right. So anyway, Wonder Woman. It's been out for a while. The movie theater that I saw it in sat like 50 because it's, again, first class.
Yeah,
and it was about half full. So what did we all think? Now, I know what I think. We talked already what Chris and Nicole thought.
We're a table divided.
A table divided.
No, not really.
So
not
let's start with... pros for the it's a good movie. Cole Hornaday.
Yeah. Let me just preface this by saying that, guys, I like the DC movie. This is kind of cause for concern and or celebration. The quibbles I have with this movie are pretty minor because I thought Gadot was just terrific, and I love the stuff on. I loved getting. Well, here, let me back up a little bit. So I've been a sporadic reader of Wonder Woman since I was a kid. In fact, watching the film, I was regretting purging my George Perez Wonder Womans because those were actually quite good comics and kind of set up, am I not correct, a lot of the newer mythology that's been incorporated, that was incorporated into the film and stuff.
Yeah.
It's no longer called Paradise Island or Amazonia. It's Themyscira, you know, stuff like that. I just thought all the stuff on, I'm just going to call it Paradise Island because I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. All the stuff on the island was just marvelous. That first combat sequence was great. But one of the things that I really appreciated about the movie is that when we get to World War II Europe, and I have a big problem with this because they made a big to-do about we're going to set this in World War I, and it might have well been World War II because those Germans were Nazis. Mm-hmm. They were treated like Nazis. They were marked as Nazis. They acted like the comic book Nazis. They were Nazis, and we're in World War I. Beside the point, when they are charging through no man's land, she's defensive. She is not killing anybody. She is deflecting. She's charging through. It is the men who are shooting and killing people left and right. And I was like, that's a big deal. To me, that is a very big deal in how a protagonist in a superhero film of this nature, especially in a war sequence, is performing.
I'm pretty sure she killed a bunch of guys in that big, small little room, though.
Yeah.
She
yeah.
killed a oh, lot yeah. of people
she
in that
She killed
room.
A lot of people, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I didn't see her as killing people.
But at one point, she had to use... a shield.
And she really wanted to murder that guy. Granted, she knew she thought he was a god, but she didn't ask him about that first. She just went straight for the kill. Mm-hmm. So continue.
Yes, keep going.
No, it's okay. That's what I got away from. That was my takeaway from the No Man's Land. Oh. I just thought a lot of moments that were emphasizing them killing and her not. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe I misinterpreted it because there were just... my like I said, my quibbles are few. I have a terrible time with the formulaic nature of superhero stories right now.
Yes.
And that we have to have a big knockdown drag out with the big bad at the end, and that's how we tell these stories. And I'm just was kind of like bored with that. I was really bored with it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I thoroughly I had the best time with it. It was not Fury Road.
No, it was not.
But there were moments that I were like Fury Road appealing to me that touched me that way. So that because you know Fury Road's always going to be my barometer for what I would consider progressive action adventure storytelling. So all right, I'm done.
Alrighty,
yeah.
Chris and or Nicole on the Converse.
Oh, well, how about let's continue with positive.
Yeah,
for
let's
just
keep
a bit
going
more.
With okay. positive. Yeah.
So. I completely agree. Everything on Themyscira, I was down with. I loved the Amazons. I wanted to know more about them than any of the male characters. The No Man's Land rush scene was, I think, the best action scene. Mm-hmm. Then everything got everything before and after had a little too much 300 slow motion, and I hate that.
I agree.
The
movie would have been like 10 minutes shorter.
Yeah. Gal Gadot, I thought, really worked for me on this one. I don't know if she'll work for me in the future. She worked for me so much more in this one because she had that innocence to her. Mm-hmm. And she portrayed that pretty well. She also had a sweetness that I really did like.
She really did.
You know, when she asked, like, who's going to sing for me, Charlie? Stuff like that. I thought that was great. I liked pretty much all the acting. I thought Chris Pine acting was fine. I loved all the Amazons. And that's about... And then for me, the most positive thing is the representation aspect. How happy this is making a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It's a different thing for me because it's obviously, you know, not quite meant to inspire me the same way necessarily. But I do take that as a very important thing from the film. So that's the majority of my positives I could think of off the top of my hat.
Yeah, I think you guys all pretty much nailed.
Got that.
Yeah. I did like the scenes in, is it Themyscira? Is that how you pronounce
it? Themyscira is how I usually hear it.
Yeah, should we look this up? Because I don't know.
It did feel,
doing this right.
At some parts, it did feel a little bit, this is Sparta for 300.
Yeah.
And
oh, that's Cole's shaking his head.
No, I just, it annoys me that now has become shorthand for how we depict superhero fight scenes not in the Marvel universe, but definitely in the DC one.
Slow motion. Yeah.
It's I don't really understand what the point is. Are we slowing down to feature this moment?
It's a mixture of slow motion and bullet time from The Matrix.
Which got old before the first film was done in The Matrix
and
series.
And it kind of, at some points, it kind of took me out because I'm like, all of that was 100% CG.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so...
Speaking of CG, so how about that mustache?
Oh, God.
Eris mustache. I was really hoping he would mutate into some monster.
Yeah, and then there's a flashback
of
him. But
he's just
a
crusty
younger,
old British guy.
Yeah. Since when do Greek gods look like British men? Middle-aged British men with mustaches.
Yeah.
Sometimes, just real quick, the slow motion sometimes is helpful for me because action scenes can get so intense and so fast.
Yeah.
That some of the slow motion I actually appreciated because I could really take a moment to take in the scene and the costuming and all the different things because I think they did a lot of the scenery and things very well.
Yeah.
So I appreciated that. Not all of it. Like when she just has a leg like going back and you're like, okay, you know, but otherwise.
I have a pronunciation update. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Lay it on.
Chris is right. Themyscira.
Themyscira. Yeah.
Themyscira.
Themyscira. Mm-hmm.
All right. So yeah, Themyscira was great. Yeah. I had just like I enjoyed it. I mean, but it's the Ghostbusters conundrum. Like from my point of view, like this is such an empowering film for women. You know, any critique I lobby towards it. I feel like I'm being sexist. These are it's not coming from that.
It's where you
direction.
Have to kind of try to take out the political aspect of it and look at it for its merit.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I'm at with the Wonder Woman stuff. Because Ghostbusters is the most formulaic movie ever.
Right.
But I loved the ghosts in it, and I enjoyed the characters that didn't have great characterization, but it had all the people that I wanted to see in it.
And I...
But it was not without tons of flaws, and right, I wouldn't be offended if people are like, that was really boring. You know, I'd be like, got it. You know?
I actually tried to discuss it on Facebook, and I got shot down.
Well, don't have an discussion on Facebook.
Well, I've been really, to be frank, I've been very selective about the people who are in that circle.
Yeah.
You know, and it was one of those times where it's like, okay, you know what? I don't want to fight with you. I'm just going to drop it.
Yeah.
And I don't like having to drop things, but I do drop things.
Yeah,
I dropped the discussion of the Ghostbusters film.
Yeah.
But the side note, one of the fallbacks that really annoys me is people say, well, you need to see extended version.
Ben and I have a mutual friend
who is convinced that I would like be Batman versus Superman if I saw the 4.5-hour version of it, which he's more than happy to loan to me.
I actually watched the ultimate version. I never watched the original, but only because I was having to I was stuck in my house working, so I was like, okay, I guess I might as well watch this thing. And it was not as bad as everyone said because there was actually more time to flesh out all the things.
Sure,
but it was still terrible, still absolutely bad.
All right. Well, and supposedly this is true of the female Ghostbusters, or the modern. How do I even want to describe that? The
Ghostbusters 2016
or whatever. There you go.
Ghostbusters 2016.
I don't think anything should be, director's cut or ultimate edition should be the reason why, how you should watch a movie. You should just watch it for how it was released
and judge it based off of that. Yeah.
And then maybe you could be like, the ultimate edition was better because blah, 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 but it's not the original, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, let's go back to Wonder Woman.
The only other thing that I was quite literally rolling my eyes at during this movie is I'm kind of done with the whole love conquers all aspect of storytelling. And Wonder Woman got a burst of energy when she saw the love of her life go up in flames.
Well, even then, I thought they didn't over push the relationship as much.
No.
But here's the thing that killed me about the end. Okay, I'm fine with the love thing. Be consistent in your storytelling, though. So these not Nazis we established were not infected by Ares.
Yes, thank you.
Everybody was just a douchebag.
Yeah.
They were loading planes of death. Mm-hmm. So after the explosion and everyone survives, you have her friends and they're hugging each other. We survive. I'm like, okay, got it. And then you see two young German boys being like, we survive. And they're hugging. You're like, okay, you're both evil. You can hug each other. And then you get the Native American fellow and he's next to a guy and they're like, ha, ha, ha. And they hug and love each other.
Yeah.
It's like, you were trying to murder each other so hard a minute ago. I'm not down with this, this version of your love. Like, she didn't release love into the air at the end. Oh, she kind of.
But
did.
I guess she
killed
did.
Ares. She took that out of the air.
But he didn't do anything.
He
literally did nothing.
No, but they established, they hardcore established that he does not control humans. He just whispers sweet evils to them.
And only to two or three.
It's not a presence thing. It's not a radiation of evil thing.
Within the language of the film,
they should have said that if that was the case.
Yeah, so that was just like, why is everyone hugging each other? That was so weird.
So may I get into one of my largest problems with this?
Go for it.
So this is part of the World War One, World War Two, because you were more hopeful about World War One being irrelevant.
I believe the press, buddy.
Right.
That's what I believe.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh.
Seriously, no. I read the press release discussing why they were making this choice. I was like, he puts his finger to his chin. That sounds like it has potential. And I'm a dumb bat.
But
I've got two separate parts to this. First of all, they made it a point, World War One, blah, blah, blah. Not many people know about World War One. This is a moment where I would have liked an old-fashioned Indiana Jones map crawl where you see where they're going on the front line, because they're like, front line, this line, there's many front lines. So I'm just like, I don't really know where they are at any point in this movie, other than you made it to London, but how far is Themyscira from anything?
That's another thing.
Right. It's like, you were lucky to get a boat, and I'm just like, well, okay, are we talking mid-Pacific, mid-Atlantic? What's happening here? But so that's minor.
It was definitely magic Mediterranean.
Sure.
Magic Mediterranean.
But that's minor. That's nitpick. So here's my thing, though.
Did you see the color of that water? That's magic Mediterranean.
That is super magic. Yeah, very clear.
Anyway.
So my feeling, the reason they did it from the beginning was, oh, they want less comparisons to Captain America, mm-hmm. and they thought that was just because of the time period. No, it's because if you watch the movie, this was Captain America. Mm-hmm. And let me count the ways. Mm-hmm. First of all, let's see here. She gets a scrappy team of Howling Commando-like guys, yep. multicultural team, mm-hmm. just like in the movie, and they go on their adventure forward. They have to stop a scarred-faced villain from using a giant plane of death from going on a murderous path. Like, mm-hmm. okie dokie, it's an older-looking plane, but Red Skull plane. And then a blonde fellow named Steve sacrifices himself in a plane to prevent it from going its directed course. Mm-hmm. And then if you wait after the credits and you watch the staff, there is a Steve Rogers in the credits. I caught that with somebody else. We were just kind of bored and watching, waiting for the second ending that never happened. And at the same time, we're like, Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, at some point they're like, well, we're not going to rewrite the whole script, but how do we change everything so it's not obviously Captain America? Let's go to World War One. It's like, there's just too many similarities.
But origin, yeah. Well, what?
The origins are different. I'm just saying,
but
all
they're from the same time period.
Same time period.
Sitting around the World War II.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
yeah know, but, like, this is the one DC
the
movie. Yeah. This yeah. is the one DC movie my husband went to because, you know, bad babes, bad warrior babes. But he was just like, Captain America did it better. Like, you did not sway my Marvel boy over, and I want him to be swayed so he'll go to more DC movies with me.
Yeah.
Because it'll be good.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I did like this. For me, it's like a 7 out of 10, which is, for me, really good. But there's just, I have trouble getting over a lot of these little technical things. There's some weird edits in this film. We were talking about, there's a scene where she stabs the guy to death, and then she leaves the sword, and then she's like, oops, I left the sword. And then they cut to somebody, and they cut back, and she hops down really quick, and you're like, you didn't have to cut that.
Yeah, it's like they set it up to be like this big thing. She doesn't have her sword.
And then it's just no payoff, really. Yeah, no payoff.
But yeah, and then I didn't care for much of like the, actually, yeah. Everything up to the island, through the island, I'm good for. Mm-hmm. Some of the Europe stuff, okay. I was bored entirely everything after that. So a lot of people I hear say like, oh yeah, it falls on the third act. It falls at the second act for me.
Yeah.
It was, for me, the second act was too much like Crocodile Wonder Woman.
Right.
You know, it's
watch your gut move, you know, all these wacky things.
How do doors work?
Watch your acclimate to the strange and wonderful
and
Western
also
world.
There was like an awkward montage of like, let's dress Diana.
Yeah,
but like the movie is so sad that it's weird having this cheery sort of like 80s montage in the middle. Mm-hmm. And like they try to do the Marvel quips and stuff too, kind of like similar. Mm. And the acting is fine in them, but they just fell flat for me.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of pushing two different tones together. Like it's got to be dark and gray and Snyder, but then it's also cheery because love conquers all, except that like fell flat for me too.
Yeah.
So I was like, except when you murder everybody and there's war and humans suck. By the way, did you know that they suck?
I do appreciate that the final message was, hey, humans tend to suck.
Yeah, but I could have skipped out on that one because I already knew.
Did the villains do much for any of you? I know, you, Nicole, that you did like Dr. Poison.
I did like her, yeah.
She was the most interesting one for me, but she still was cliche and they didn't really do anything to develop her.
She had no payoff.
If they could have stripped the other ones, they could have taken Ares out completely, in my opinion, and then they could have maybe focused a little bit more on her because she was intriguing, because she was very menacing, she was obviously a psychopath, you know, like that. I did enjoy her as a villain. Yeah,
a psychopath who just wanted to be loved.
No, she didn't. She wanted to be left alone. Don't touch me.
they're cliche with the German general guy, the one that made me kind of break apart laughing a little bit, was they do the obligatory scene where he's like, you know, is everything, how long till everything's ready? Oh, it's gonna be, you know, like 2 days. Yeah. And the guy's like, make it tonight. And he's like, we can't do that. Okay. And he shoots him dead. They should have added a scene where he says like, you're in charge now. Instead, I just picture these guys like, the chain of command's gone, so we're definitely not getting this done by tonight.
All he really needed to do was say Hail Hydra.
Right? It's something,
That's all that really needed to be happening there.
All right. So let's wrap this up. Just a couple nitpicky things for me. Apparently, the plane of death was going to poison everybody in a 50-mile radius. He gets about 500 yards before he shoots the plane. Nobody's concerned about the 50-mile radius there. Also, it's the boat that they're the boat ride from Themyscira to London.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, so they're sleeping, and I'm assuming it's in the middle of the Atlantic or the middle Pacific somewhere, and then in, like, 8 hours, they're in London, and, like, Wonder Woman didn't even wake up to hear Steve talk to the tugboat guy or to hook up the boat, and none of this. She slept through all that, and my lady friend had a nice line. What is she, Slumber Woman?
Oh but I'm
because when
really
they're
terrible
when they roll into London, I'm like, really, you got there that fast? Anyway, so we would have talked about one of the best Wonder Woman comics, but let's save that for another day. Let's move on to Book Report. And hey Chris, let's start with you.
I'll do a book report on Wonder Woman. So this is a Wonder Woman annual that came out, it is written and drawn by a few teams, including Greg Rucka, Nicholas Scott, Romulo Fajardo Jr., and I just want to make sure I credit these team here. Colin Kelly, Jackson Lanzig, and David LaFuente did one of my favorite stories, which I'll talk about in a second. It opens up with a Greg Rucka piece, which is reintroducing the first time Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman met. And this one's made it online quite a bit. Everybody loves the story, and with good reason. It's really cute. Superman and Batman are spying on Wonder Woman, and she catches them, and she makes him touch the golden lasso, and they all have to tell the truth, and she's like, my name is Diana, da da da, and Superman's, I'm Clark Kent, Kal-El, and Batman's like, I'm Batman. And they're like, seriously, that's your name? He's like, shut up. And Batman's doing his best to just be grouchy by holding the rope, and he's still grouchy at the end, and Superman's just like, all right, do you think it's a trick? Do you think whatever? And like Batman's like, no, we saw her heart. We have a lot of catching up to do. So they did a fun story there.
He's got bat anti-lasso spray.
Yeah. There's a short story about King Shark, which is okay. And then there's a short story where she's fighting a samurai, which is okay. It's got nice art by Stephanie Hans. But the one that...
I like Stephanie Hans. It's she did the Angela series, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one that killed it for me is the one drawn by David LaFuente, where there is a kaiju invading the city.
Of course.
And it's a pretty cool looking kaiju, and Wonder Woman goes to fight it, but when she puts the lasso on, she's like, oh wait, she talks monster. And so she gets a quick view of the monster growing up, and he's just alone, and he has no choice. And then everybody keeps attacking the monster, so she saves the monster and takes him to, like, a monster island. And he's, like, a happy little monster guy. He's, like, I got all these dinosaur friends. And, like, she plays, like, throw the stick with him. It's just really...
It's a tree trunk.
Big tree trunk. And, like, look at him. He's, like, hatching out his egg. And he's so cute. It's just... It's a really cute Wonder Woman saves the day by learning someone's problem and then helping them solve its story. But it's a giant monster.
It's like a Pacific Rim monster,
It's a Pacific Rim monster.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Like a knife head. Looks very much like the...
Yeah. And, like, nobody's really talked about that one online. And I'm a little surprised by that. But maybe that's just my love of cute monsters. So, yeah, this is a fun anthology. It's $4.99. Two of the stories are fantastic. Two of them are pretty good, and one of them I don't care about. That's a good average. So I highly recommend it.
Cool. Wonder Woman Annual number one. Thanks, Chris. Mm-hmm. Cole Hornaday, what about you, sir?
Well, I'm very sad. I'm actually very sad and a little angry, but I got blindsided by the cancellation of the Flintstones comic book.
Yeah, really?
Be as facetious as you like. I actually was like reading
along. I actually am not being facetious. That surprises me because that comes
to
me.
Well, I don't think it was canceled because a lot of them are just going to 12
right.
issues.
Well, then that's unfortunate. I mean,
he's going to go and write a sourpuss? No, Snagglepuss. Snagglepuss.
No, I realize that. But but there was a lot of good things happening in this. And I, because I don't read the solicitations, I'm reading along and I'm like, what? And there's some subplots. And they have this nice little closure with bowling ball, and he makes a new friend. He makes a new vacuum cleaner friend. Is it vacuum? Yeah, no, shop vac in the storage unit. And if you recall, if you've been reading the comic book, if you've been listening to me carry on about this comic book for months, bowling ball is actually an armadillo, and he was for his he was friends with vacuum cleaner was actually a baby elephant who died in the previous issue from overconsumption of garbage in a movie theater.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of heartbreaking stuff. Anyway, I had some major issues with how they wrapped this because they were actually going down some new risky terrain, and that was pertaining to the First Church of Gerald. They're putting up a sign that the priest and his assistant or his deacon or whatever are putting up a sign in front of the church, and they don't have enough room on the sign for it to say Gerald doesn't rub it in, or you know, the First Church of Gerald. So they just shorten Gerald to G-D. Getting this, guys? And I was like, okay, yeah, we're gonna get into risky territory here. Fun, end of comic. Poo. I was very frustrated. I didn't see it coming. And with a book that has such potential to do more and say more and explore more, I was like, this ain't fair. Life ain't fair. And now I've discovered that comic books ain't fair, and I'm very unhappy about that.
So I'll sign you up for Snaggle Plus. You'll be fine.
Oh, but I already it's not solicited yet. I need a fix like that.
And wait a few more months.
Okay, but I have to say, and it's a great issue. It's really well done. It's a well done story. I just had concerns about the threads that they were working on that they didn't fall through on. But I have to say, it's the tackiest cover ever. It is a swipe on the Hero Quits covers where your protagonist is in the foreground walking away from the superhero team. Only in this case, it's Fred with his bag slung over his shoulder and all the dinosaurs looking on. And it's not even drawn by Steve Pugh. I had a couple of... I was blindsided by a couple of changes this month that I didn't anticipate that I had a lot of trouble with. And I guess that's a good thing because I don't really care enough. have not for many years, but, you know, they switched up the team on Doctor Strange and that blindsided me too.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And anyway.
Did you read the Prez?
I did not read the Prez.
Go backwards, read Prez. That'll keep you happy.
Yep, okay.
More way. Russell, you know.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
But not Pew.
No Pew.
Okay.
Pew, pew.
Anyway, thank you for your patience while I recover from this.
All right. Thanks, Cole. The Flintstones. And finally, Nicola, what do you got for us?
Surprise, it's an all-lady comic from Boombox. I'm switching it up. I've never read a thing like this before. Okay, anyway, let me start this over. I read Misfit City number one, and it is written by Kiwi Smith, Kirsten Kiwi Smith, and Kurt Lustgarter, and illustrated by Naomi Franquiz. I'm having troubles here. Anyway, it's a very cute comic. It takes place in Oregon. Looks like on around Cannon Beach where they filmed the Goonies. And it's all about this one town being kind of a tourist trap for the Goonies, except they call it the Gloomies. Mm-hmm. And there's all these fun little riffs on it and lots of really great humor. It's a group of young women, and they're just like, you know, somebody works at a coffee shop, somebody's running the local museum that's got, you know, some memorabilia about the movie, some guy passes away who may or may not be a pirate because they keep talking about the parrots that he had. And he has a trunk that he donates. His kids, they get like a house but not the trunk. And so they are like, we need to get the trunk. And the girls who they're just like, you know, playing cards and whatever. And they're like, oh, well, let's go check out what's in this trunk. And it's like, you know, it's like a treasure map. And so it ends up being a pirate. It's kind of meta, sort of in that way. It seems like real world, but not. But yes, but then pirates, but then no. So yeah, okay. It's very cute. The writing I think is really excellent. The you know, you get a world of who the characters are. Like there's the musician, then there's the kind of neurotic one, and then there's the blasé one, and that kind of thing. I've read a lot of like group lady things recently, so it's all like, oh, you know you're that girl. But I really like it, and there's a bunch of issues that are out, so I'll probably round out the series. it's kind of a fun take off of just not having just a straight pirate kind of story, instead having this real world-esque but kind of off the beaten path, and having it be Oregon. And there's just these great things where these guys are coming into the town and they're like, yeah, we want to go see the gloomy stuff. And some girl is just like, oh, well, you know, if you like this, you know, all the nerds like going to this one thing, you know, and they're like, nerds suck. And she's like, I meant it as a compliment. And these guys are just like bro dudes and just being like really rude about stuff. But the snark is great. So I would definitely recommend it. Misfit City, number one.
Is it written by an Oregonian, or is it created by Oregonian creators?
I didn't look into that.
Okay. Because I was just curious because I
Because you're an Oregonian?
Well, yeah.
No.
Well, yeah, but I almost did an actually on you.
actually, Goonies is set in Astoria. And
Oh,
actually,
well, yeah. So then there you go.
Yeah. But but Haystack Rock is in
Yeah, so they use a lot of...
they have both
kind
locations.
Of off the beaten, like what is actually real. Right. So... It didn't really say like actually it's an Astoria. So that's why I got it wrong.
Okay.
But yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to make that a phrase, by the by, is and turn it actually into a verb. Mm. I actually do. Mm. Yeah. So I've started doing that.
Actualizing.
Yeah. But you also have to wear glasses. So you can push them up and go, actually.
All right. Yeah. Misfit City number one. Thank you, Nicole. That is Book Report, and that is our show. Thank you for listening. You can find us every week at iTunes or perfectboundpodcast.com. However you get your podcast, send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. And also visit Comic Extension here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicextension.com. And now get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. This week our questions come to us from Chris Slade. Honest, Chris.
This one is called Tribute or Ripoff.
I love the theme.
This first question is, this cosmic villain threatened the entire DC universe back in 2001, forcing multiple planets to unite to fend him off in a crossover called Our Worlds at War. Very much influenced by the great Jack Kirby, this villain was the embodiment of entropy, taking the form of pure energy contained inside a humanoid set of armor. Since the dawn of time, he has repeatedly destroyed the universe to create a new one from the ashes of the old. What was his name? He was also in the Legion of Superheroes cartoon series.
Cole's thinking hard.
I'm sorry.
Imperiex. Mm. Very much Galactus, if you see him.
Yeah, yeah.
But we call that one the tribute.
Okay.
Hey, bitter that Timely Comics' 1950s iteration, Atlas Comics, had relaunched their hero, Captain America, in a new series in 1954, the writer-artist team of Joe Simon and Jack Kirby created another patriotically themed character, also in 1954. Simon recalled, "We thought we'd show them how to do Captain America." Now, back in the 1990s, Rob Liefeld did a Captain America series, but due to Marvel filing for bankruptcy, he was asked to take a pay cut. After refusing, he was cut loose, and then he approached Joe Simon and Roz Kirby, widow of Jack Kirby, about bringing back their Captain America analog. What was this character's name?
I have two names in my head. The first is Fighting American.
You got it.
Okay, yay!
I'm going to guess you'll be able to get the next question. Part two, Liefeld's Folly. Simon and Roz Kirby agreed to license the character of the Fighting American to Liefeld, but at a price Liefeld would not accept. Liefeld then created a similar character, drawing, quote, maybe three pinups in one poster image, but that made it online and everybody saw it coming out. And then he withdrew the character because Simon threatened to sue. Liefeld negotiated a new deal for the Fighting American, but alas, was then sued by Marvel. Who was the knockoff of the knockoff?
Super Patriot?
No.
Oh.
That's the Savage Dragon guy. Okay. This is the Agent America. I compel anybody interested, go do a search for Agent America and Fighting American. There's a picture online of Rob Liefeld's Captain America, Fighting American, and Agent American. They are the exact same thing, and he is a hack. Yep. Next question. Yep.
So that's a ripoff, you say?
Yeah, it's a ripoff, okay. I say.
Yes.
Fans may be familiar with Frank Castle, the vigilante known as the Punisher, but they may be less familiar with a monthly men action-adventure series that started in 1969 following the exploits of the character Mac Bolan and his wars against organized crime and international terrorism. Mac Bolan is a Vietnam vet who keeps a war journal, drives a high-tech war wagon, and tends to shoot a lot of bad guys to death. His 97 confirmed kills as a sniper in Vietnam gave birth to the nickname he would carry for the rest of his life.
The Executioner.
Yes, correct. That is pretty much ripoff.
Yeah, people forget that.
Yeah.
Yeah, people forget that.
And he's got like over 400
because,
books.
Because Frank Castle didn't fight in Vietnam now. They
changed
the Gulf
it up.
War.
Yeah. Final question. This is a series of things here. A mockbuster, also known as a knockbuster or a drafting opportunity, is a movie created with the intention of exploiting the publicity for a major movie with a similar title or subject.
Oh, right.
Unlike films that are produced to capitalize on the popularity of a recent release by adopting similar genre or storytelling elements, mockbusters are generally produced concurrently with upcoming films and released direct to video at the same time the real film reaches theaters or video outlets.
I had no idea there was a name for that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A mockbuster may be similar enough in title, packaging, etc., in hopes that consumers confuse it with the actual film it mimics, but their producers maintain that they are simply offering additional products for consumers who want to watch additional films in the same subgenre. I'll name a couple legit...
A fraction of the budget.
Yeah. I will name a couple legit movies. Please guess the name of the knockbuster.
Oh, yeah.
Transformers. There's no thought put into these. Almost the first stupid thing you can say will be right.
Changing robots.
Not that.
Robot changers.
I was going to say Robojocks, but Robojocks is from the 80s.
Transmorphers. You guys are like in sync.
Yeah, we all are synced up tonight. Yeah.
Next one, Pacific Rim.
Atlantic
Coast. Wait. Is it naughty?
No. Oh, there is
a naughty one.
There is a naughty one.
Okay, but that's not the
That's
okay.
not it.
It's not even... So the title is almost exactly the same.
Almost. Right? Rim is still in here.
Oh. Pacifico Rim.
Ocean Rim.
Atlantic Rim.
Atlantic Rim.
Cole gets it.
That's terrible.
Next one. Pixar's Up.
In the sky.
This one will make you angry.
Down.
What's Up?
Oh.
Finally, Happy Feet.
Oh.
Happy
Dancing
Penguin.
Dancing Toes.
Tappy Toes.
Tappy Toes.
There's some great ones.
Wow.
And these are made in the States? Do you know?
Some are not. There's subsections of this entire thing that have to do with foreign knockoffs, foreign fake sequels. Mm-hmm. Like Trolls 2 is a fake foreign sequel of Trolls 1.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was an Italian couple who made Trolls 2.
Yep. Yeah. There's a lot of weird things like that. There was a Planet of the Apes ripoff in Japan, like 10 years later.
Time of the Apes.
I think it was Time of the Apes. Something.
Yeah, they done it at Mystery Science Theater. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So that makes it into this category.
Yeah, guys got to see
Planet of the Apes. Should I watch the Mystery Science Theater version?
You don't want to watch the original. That's just tedious and depressing.
All right. Well, we're gonna go off and watch Time of the Apes now. Thank you for listening and for sticking with us. And we will see you next week.